This show was furnished by Rowan, Gervey, and Wynn.
It's time for Gervey's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervey. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervey, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Carrie Kasem. Carrie brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gervey and Carrie Kasem.
Good afternoon, Los Angeles. And everyone listening all over the world on KBC.com. I am Alan Gervey, the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervey, and Wynn. And today, as I fight this music, I am here to be the managing partner of your life. And Carrie doesn't have to fight the music because she's remote. Carrie, you're remote. Where are you?
I'm at home with my face. It's been lasered off, so I'm not going anywhere until this heals.
But you always go out when you've lasered your face off.
No, this one, this one, not so much. You can use filters and kind of like make your skin look good if you do a picture or a video, but no, it's a brown and gross. So it'll be done next week. I'll come in.
Probably the strangest request I ever had in 7.5 years of doing this show was when you called me up and you said, can you give me a ride into the studio and can I sit in your back seat? Because I just had some laser done and I can't see any light. And little did you know that I had two car seats, baby seats in the back seat, and you had to sit on one of the baby seats.
I did. And, you know, it worked. I didn't get any light on my face. But we have guests coming in. So we didn't have guests then. So, you know, I don't care about looking bad in front of you. But, you know, it does.
You're trying to impress Joe Collins?
I love Joe. Joe's great. He's the one that actually changed my house color. I'm not even kidding you.
What, he's a painter? I thought he was running for Congress.
No, he came over, my house was getting painted, and I'm like, I wanted a gray house. And he drives up, because he's doing my podcast, he drives up, and he goes, calls me, he goes, hey, are you the blue house on the corner? I'm like, excuse me, the what house? He says, blue. No, my house is supposed to be gray. I walk outside, I'm not kidding you, they were painting my house blue. And I stopped it, and thank God he said something. So we switched the paint.
That is very weird. So you didn't know they were painting your house blue, and it took Joe Collins coming up to your house to tell you they're painting your house? Joe, what's up with that?
I didn't know. I didn't know it was not supposed to be blue. And so me being a rookie, the rookie eye that I am, I'm like, oh, it got to be the blue house. And because it looks like everybody else's house on the street, which is blue. And I'm like, if you're going for gray, they failed. You know, it's a sky blue.
Yeah, no.
It
was horrible. So now it's a light, light
on,
gray.
Why were you calling on Carrie? What was up with that?
I was on her show. I was on her podcast. Yeah.
Oh, cool. All right. Was that lately, by the way?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Probably about 2.5 weeks ago.
Oh, that is recent. All right. Well, we're going to get to...
I did a filter on Joe. That gave him, like, lipstick. Do you remember that, Joe? I still haven't put it out.
You didn't come in lipstick today.
I made him look like a woman.
It was a cell phone thing. I can only do it on a cell phone.
Joe's a good-looking guy, but he doesn't have lipstick on. So that, I'm thankful for that today. We're going to get to Joe in a few minutes. He's running for Congress against Maxine Waters. Lots to say about that. But before we do, recently in the news, a lot of people saw this. It was everywhere. Alan Lichtman, who is a historian, American historian, he's been teaching at American University since 1973. That's enough in Washington, D.C. That's enough to get you, I think, a congressional medal to teach at one place for that long. He was in the news because he's got such a long history of predicting the president of the United States election, the winner since 1981, since Reagan, he's been predicting every time the winner, and he got Trump right. And now he has just come out and said that Joe Biden's going to win. Alan Lichtman, welcome to Gervey's Law.
Thank you so much. That was one of the longest and most interesting introductions I've ever had.
Well, that's what, Carrie, what do you say to that?
That's, that's what he's known for. And seriously, 7 years of this, he's never, everybody he introduces, somebody will say something like that.
You know, it's funny because when we've had Alan Dershowitz on quite a few times, and we're talking about Alan's here because I'm an Alan, Alan Lichtman's an Alan, yes. And Alan Dershowitz. When I gave Alan his introduction, he said he wished his mother would have heard it because his mother never had any faith in him when he was in high school and wanted her to hear what I had to introduce him with. So you can, other people have said they recorded and they played in the morning just to pump them up before they get going in their day. Alan, let's talk about this. So there's 13 different criteria you use, and it's called the Keys to the White House. Great name, the Keys to the White House, because there's a double meaning there. And Absolutely. That's the model. Tell us about your 13 criteria for the Keys to the White House, and then we'll talk about why Biden got the keys this year.
Yes. The big insight behind the keys is that American presidential elections are essentially votes up or down on the performance and strength of the party holding the White House. In other words, and heretically, I have argued that governing, not campaigning, counts. And the keys gauge the strength and performance of the White House party. And they look at things like midterm election results, third parties, long and short-term economy, scandals, social unrest, policy change, foreign policy successes and failures. And only two keys have anything to do with the candidates, and they're very, very high threshold keys. They ask whether the incumbent party candidate is one of those once-in-a-generation charismatic candidates like Ronald Reagan, or that the challenger is not charismatic, because the keys are all geared to the party holding the White House. And the way it works, if six or more of the keys are false, that is, turn against the White House party, they are predicted losers. Any six. It's a completely unweighted, nonlinear system.
But you say that it's scientific, yet there has been some criticism, not by the results, because obviously the results speak for themselves, but the criticisms have been that some of the categories are subjective. I know Nate Silver had talked about this being subjective. How do you address that? Because when you look at someone like Donald Trump, I think there are a lot of subjective issues that will have an impact on whether or not he gets reelected.
Great question. I've been doing this, as you pointed out, for 40 years. For 40 years, I've heard this criticism. And so, believe it or not, I'm ready to answer. First of all, we are dealing with the human world. And historians make judgments about the human world all the time. It turns out that the so-called objective models, the big econometric models or the big election prediction models, don't work. And after about 15 years of my doing my work, the professional forecasting community finally recognized that the most successful models are like mine. They combine some totally objective criteria, like midterm election counts, with judgmental calls. I twice keynoted the International Summit on Forecasting. I published in every forecasting journal. Secondly, the keys are far less subjective than it would seem. While we may all have our own opinions about some of these things, the opinions don't matter. What matters is the system. And when you all buy my book, Predicting the Next President, The Keys to the White House 2020, you'll see two things. One is a chapter fully devoted to the definition of each keys. And the second is how I answered each key since 1860, because I developed the system retrospectively from 1860 to 1980. So we have more than 150 years of answers to these questions, and the answers have to be consistent. Third thing is, you know what? I love the judgmental factor, because the keys are the world's only do-it-yourself prediction system. You know, all those big equations, either you take them or leave them. But anyone can, as long as I'm consistent with what's in my book, can try to answer these. and we can argue about it. We can debate it. We can talk about it. It makes it really interesting, and it makes it a great teaching tool.
Alan, I got to take a break in about 30 seconds, but I just want a quick question because I want to ask you about the timing. You're talking about your book, which everyone should go out and get, and that's 2020. You're talking about the prediction that you made just last week that Joe Biden would win this election. Why do you do it now? Isn't there a lot that can happen? Because later in the show, we're going to talk to Joe Collins, and he's got a fight on his hand against Maxine Waters for Congress. And there's a lot that can happen from now until November. What about, why are you predicting now?
You want my quick answer?
Yeah, the quick answer.
You never know when the keys fall into place. I called the hard-to-call 2012 election in 2010. I called 08 in 2006. But the keys fell into place this time, right after the second quarter numbers were released at the end of July. That explains my timing. And thirdly, and we can talk about this some more, the keys are the big picture. They're big things. The economy doesn't change overnight. You're not going to erase midterm elections. You're not going to get rid of the scandal. Keys don't change easily.
All right. So you're not afraid of what's going to happen, especially given the pandemic that we're all suffering through now, from now till the election. Yes or no?
There are two things I'm afraid of, but they're outside the parameters of the keys. One is voter suppression. The other is Russian intervention. And we can talk about that.
We'll talk about that when we get back after the break. Quickly, we'll talk about that. But you're not falling into the witness. I'm the lawyer here. When I say yes or no, you got to say yes or no. But you didn't give me a yes or no. So we'll find out about that.
My answer is no. I'm not worried about the keys changing.
There you go. I like that. That's some good guts. Okay, we're going to play some Alicia Keys when we get back. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
The glass is always half full when you're listening to Gervie's Law on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Remember you, running soft through the night. All right. I'm waving. We're talking about the keys. Come on, man. Get the keys on. Hey, Carrie?
Yes.
When Joe was at your house, was he spending the whole time on his Twitter feed at JoeCollins43rd or JoeCollinsForCongress.com, his website?
No, he was putting his makeup on.
Really? Well, I guess he's serious today because he's just, he spends more time on his phone than you do.
That's true.
He's tweeting. He's got to get out there. He's doing the right thing, you know? I mean, of all the candidates out there right now, he has more presence all over the internet, which is the right thing. I mean, he's doing it right. He's doing it right.
Well, I don't know about that because, you know, I like to have a little bit of communication. You know, yeah, we're distance. He came to give me a big hug, and I said, hey, dude, you know, a few feet apart there. But I want to see these. He's got these big brown eyes. I want to
see.
Talk
he put
to
his
him.
Hands on my forehead. That's what happened. I'm like, hey, man, what's up? I went to give him a hug, and he said, not so fast, social distance,
yeah,
back
no,
up.
I touched his stuffy.
No, I just was trying to get your head up from your phone, man. All right, Alan, let's get back to you. Joe's waiting in the wings here. He'll be ready to roll. I'll tell you, the guy's prolific. He's not going to fall asleep at the wheel. So before the break, Alan, and by the way, we're talking to Alan Lichtman, and if you haven't read one of his books, The Case for Impeachment, you want to check that out. That was from 2017, provided a number of arguments for the impeachment of Donald Trump. You know, Alan Lichtman has been also prolific in a lot of areas. He's 17 show starts on tic-tac-toe. Wow. That's really
wow, you
impressive.
Remember my tic-tac-toe.
Of course.
That
who would forget that?
That's the favorite thing in the world.
You're famous. I mean, if it was Jeopardy, you know, you'd be, what's his name? Jennings. You're like,
I would.
You're
I would.
Like Jennings for tic-tac-toe.
Yeah.
But, you know, the thing that's really sad is back in the early 80s, it was $100,000. Nowadays, if you did that, it would be like over $1 million.
Oh, yeah. Those days was a fortune.
Yeah, for sure.
I won't even tell you, though, my fights with the IRS.
Yeah, well, we know that always happens. People don't see that side of it. So tell us about the time, because you teased us before the break and you said there are a couple factors that you're not nervous about, but you know, you talk about the Russian influence and some of the things that may be happening before the election that may make your prediction of Joe Biden questionable.
Yeah, these are things outside the realm of the Keys, outside the realm of any prediction system. And frankly, I'm more worried about their effect on our democracy than I am on the Keys. So the first is Russian intervention. We know the Russians are back. And this is not, you know, just some random Russian hacker. This is the Russian intelligence services under the direction of Vladimir Putin. And we know they likely have learned a lot in 4 years. And heaven forbid, you know, they may even this time have the ability to get into our registration rolls. And then all bets are off on this election. But we know, and Trump has basically said this, that as in 2016, he will welcome and exploit any Russian intervention on his behalf. He doesn't have to engage in a criminal conspiracy. You know, that Mueller report was just awful. Tremendous disappointment. The Russians are going to give him everything he needs. They know what he needs, and that frightens me. The other thing that frightens me is voter suppression. The post office, even before the current cutbacks, told 46 states they may not be able to deliver their mail-in ballots, you know, which is the preferred alternative at a time of pandemic. You know, I'm 73 and a cancer survivor. I'm not going to the polls. I'm certainly going to vote absentee. And that was before.
But absentee is so different.
Coming back on overtime. So I'm really worried whether we're going to have a full and fair vote. Those are the two things that keep me up at night.
You might as well go ahead and get your rest, because if that's keeping you up at night, you got some serious issues. I mean, like, I think one thing that a lot of people, especially people who talk about the person's going to win or lose, is negate the amount of work that people put into the campaign. I mean, even when President Trump ran the last time, everybody talking about, you know, Russian interference, and I think they debunked that.
They did.
Hillary Clinton was working with the Russians to interfere with the campaign, along with that false dossier and all the FBI agents lying. It's already proven. That's why the guy is testifying. That's why he's testifying, because he's already said that he lied. He lied so they can wiretap the president's campaign and all of that stuff. Come on, man. Listen, go ahead and get your rest at night. That argument's not going to work. President Trump works too hard to win.
Alan, what do you have to say to that?
I'm not getting into a political argument. That dossier is the biggest red herring we've ever heard.
That dossier was garbage, and it was trash.
It was garbage. I mean, it's been proven over and over again. And then,
if you're not going to let me talk, I'm done.
Oh, he's
upset. Let's hear him talk, Alan.
You guys have had your say. That dossier had zero impact on the election. It did not even become public until after the election. The FBI counterintelligence investigation had zero impact on the election because it didn't become public until after the election. What did become public was the Russian intervention and James Comey excoriating Hillary Clinton against Justice Department guidelines and then releasing that letter 11 days before the election against Justice Department guidelines. But none of that figured in my prediction of a Trump win. I made it before the release of the Comey letter.
So when you talk about when you made it, what's going to happen now? We only have a minute or two with you, Alan.
Sure.
But tell us about, you know, the Democratic convention coming up this week, how that's going to impact it. Kamala Harris being the vice president running mate. Now, your prediction came in before that was announced. There are other variables other than what you're talking about that may have an impact. What happens with the pandemic moving forward in the next couple months?
Yeah, great questions. And my answer is no campaign in the history of the modern history of the country has ever turned the outcome of the election. Most of my predictions were made before the campaign even began and often before even the candidates were selected, because, again, the insight behind the Keys is that governing, not campaigning, counts, and elections are essentially votes up or down on the performance of the party holding the White House, and that's what the 13 keys measure. And unless something happens to change a key, then it has no impact on my system.
So what's
I don't go outside the system.
Can I ask a question about that? Real quick, I know we have a certain amount of time. You don't think the fact that his cognitive ability, is that's not going to affect any of the keys you're talking about?
None of my keys. I already did not give him the key against Donald Trump. I did not give him the challenger key. So that doesn't count against Trump. So what you're saying doesn't matter.
That's interesting.
What is your record, by the way? I'm a sports junkie, and I'm always going with records. So tell me, you know, wins and losses.
9 for 9. Been doing this. My first prediction was for Ronald Reagan's reelection, which I made in April 1982, almost 3 years before the election, when we were in the midst of that, but at that time, the worst recession since the Great Depression. And by the way, after I made that prediction, I get a call from none other, and you're going to know this name, Lee Atwater, the political director of the Ronald Reagan White House, who had me come to the White House, explain my prediction to him, and then answer his ultimate question. What would happen if Ronald Reagan didn't run again? And I said, based on my system, you go from a sure win to a sure loss because you lose the incumbency key, the internal party battle key, and the charisma key. Well, and the rest is history.
Well, we're going to see what happens. It's really interesting. And, you know, we'd love to have you on after the election, whether you win or lose.
I have butterflies in my stomach. I've been doing this for 40 years. I still have butterflies in my stomach because I'm putting myself on the line here every 4 years.
You know, Alan, remember, there's more important things in life than winning. So you're playing the game.
Oh, my Lord.
And don't have butterflies. Just go for it. Have some confidence, and whatever happens, happens. I just think there's going to be a lot of things going on in the next couple of months. So, you know, just sit back, continue with what you're doing, and we'll see how it all works out for you. But you know,
if you get into
double digits, that's pretty strong.
Yeah, I could retire. You know,
yeah,
like,
that's right.
Rocky Marciano, undefeated.
Yeah, tic-tac-toe didn't do it, but maybe this will do it for you.
Yeah, really.
All right, Alan Lichtman, thanks so much. Professor at American University in Washington, D.C., predicting presidential winners. Appreciate you being on Gervie's Law today.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. Wow, Joe, you got fired up there.
I just don't believe some of that stuff he's talking about. It's asinine, in my opinion. You talk about everything that he said has been debunked. He's about to be 9-1 after this one.
Yeah, and what about you?
I agree.
When you know, everyone says you're running a great campaign. We're going to talk about some of the campaigning, the giving food away, the wonderful stuff you're doing, the money that you've raised. Mm-hmm. Can you beat Maxine Waters? Yes or no?
We will beat Maxine Waters.
Wait, I should have found out from Alan. What are the chances? Would I put my money on Alan being correct that Biden wins, or my money on you that you beat Maxine Waters?
You have a better chance of putting your money on me beating Maxine Waters because Trump is about to wax the floor with Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. This is a terrible pick.
Terrible pick. Kamala Harris.
Yeah, he has to be a guy who watches CNN. I mean, to say that Kamala Harris is black and South Asian, this lady is a bona fide Indian with a red dot, and she's Jamaican, and her birth certificate says Caucasian. Like, CNN got to do a better job of reporting.
But they don't really do reporting, do they?
No,
isn't it just propaganda?
It's like opinionated garbage.
And is there any journalism nowadays that isn't opinionated garbage?
No.
Okay, so it doesn't matter if it's Fox or CNN.
Doesn't matter in my opinion.
How did you get so smart on politics? You know, you've been in the Navy, 13 years? Mm-hmm. You've been, a therapist or something? Or
I was a genital
mechanic. Therapy.
And I was a sexual assault and rape victim advocate. I'm a, you know, financial broker, licensed financial broker. I was a presidential candidate for 2 years, believe it or not. You know, and I've learned a lot about politics. I learned to pay attention. Common sense is not so common. In the realm of politics these days.
Yeah, but Omar Navarro says the same thing, and that guy's a joke, isn't he?
Omar Navarro never said that. Omar Navarro is a clown show. I think, you know, Omar Navarro is somebody who needs therapy. He needs some serious help. I mean, he went to jail, caught 13 felony charges, right? Comes out, tries to talk trash about me, turns around and run for governor. It's like, buddy, you're not even in the race no more. You know, you're not, you got beat. You got beat by a new guy.
Yeah, well, I don't think you need to worry about him. I think he's collected about $10 in his campaign.
I was never worried about Omar Navarro. I even told him, I said, look, I'm from South Central Los Angeles. Regardless, I can be a Republican, Democrat, Green Party. You can't beat me on my own turf.
So why did you leave from the Green Party if you think you could have won? Because obviously with the Republican Party, you've got some juice behind you.
Well, I was only Green Party for like 2 weeks. And that wasn't a decision of mine. So my dad changed my campaign to Green Party because he didn't feel like my dad. My dad was on my campaign at the time. He didn't feel like as a black Republican from the inner city, from South Central Los Angeles, that I was going to get support from anybody. And I'm like, well, it doesn't matter. I didn't become a Republican and be a part of the team.
You know, we have Larry Elder on our show a lot. He gets support, and he's the sage from South Central.
He is.
But so what was your dad thinking?
You know, he's not heavily involved in politics. He's heavily involved in media.
So why are you listening to your dad when you know better?
Because he's my dad. You know,
that's a good answer.
It wasn't a decision that I made. I mean, like, you can go into anybody's FEC reports if you have access and change whatever you want to, regardless if it's my choice or not. It's my choice to change it back and kick them off the system, which was happening.
And you're happy, of course, that you did that, that you made the switch, because now you're going to win, in your words. And I don't know.
Well, that's when I'm a presidential campaign. I had no influence on a congressional campaign. You know, so they had reached out and told me to choose a different path. They're throwing all their support behind President Trump. I was a newcomer and didn't know. I learned a lot, and they wanted me to take those efforts and run in a different position or run a super PAC or join administration.
Do you think that's what Kamala Harris is saying now? Because her presidential candidacy kind of fizzled out really quickly. But now, look, she's on the big stage.
Hers didn't fizzle out. She tanked. And I think what the DNC was thinking, because we all know Joe Biden isn't picking anything. What the DNC is thinking, we can keep portraying her as a black woman or African American so we can get that black vote. That was a horrible mistake. I think the DNC would have been better off with Stacey Abrams or Cory Booker, like a safe choice. But you have the most controversial woman who has identity crisis as a pick, and then you're labeling her as black or African American or something as if it makes a difference to the black community. She didn't get support from the black community, because if she did, she would have won like Obama did, right?
Right.
So, I mean, that was a terrible choice. You have two people who are known for destroying black communities running for president of the United States as a Democrat. And a Democrat is supposed to be the party of, you know, quote unquote, the black people.
And after the break, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll talk about Maxine Waters as well, because when you talk about destroying black communities, I think you have something to say on that.
Yeah, birds of a feather.
All right. We got to take a quick break. Carrie, you're hanging in there, huh?
I'm listening to everything. I keep trying to cut in. It's been a little difficult today, but you know what? It's a conversation.
All right. We'll give you a chance after the break. If you want to call in and talk to Joe Collins, it's 800-222-5222, 800-222-5222. Joe, of course, knows that number because he's a host right here at KBC, does the late night wrap-up with Joe Collins on Sunday later tonight. So you can listen to Joe or you can call in. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
You've heard of Murphy's Law, but have you heard of Gervie's Law? Anything that can go wrong can be made right. Now, here are your hosts, Carrie Kasem and Alan Gervie.
Yeah, we're back. Moving in stereo. We got Carrie on one end and me on the other. Carrie's remote, not because of the pandemic necessarily, but because she's got like a robo face. She's got all kinds of stuff going on.
What's that?
That's when you have your face worked on so much that it looks like you're a robot.
Oh, you know what? So lasers make me look like a robot. I think I look pretty natural.
You do. I'm just saying what you often say, because you're very proud of it. We got Joe Collins here. He's a buddy of yours, Carrie. He grew up in South Central L.A. He tweets at Joe Collins 43rd. His website is joecollinsforcongress.com. Navy veteran, 13 years, fighter jet mechanic. He saw combat duty in Operation Iraqi Freedom. Former financial planner and mental health counselor, operates a free food pantry from his campaign headquarters. That's real positive. That's something like the Democrats would do. Joe, how have the Democrats' policies destroyed the fabric of minority communities, such as in the 43rd Congressional District?
That's a great question.
It is a good question.
If you look at every single policy that's been created by Democrats, I mean, they have done nothing to help people in the inner cities. And it's crazy because I hear a lot of people saying, well, there was a switch that the Democrats switched to Republicans and Republicans switched to Democrats. And then my first question is, well, okay, well, what has the Democrats done to provide any type of restitution to black people in any inner cities or black people in general? And they can't think of anything. And so they create policies, and every single policy is very provocative to the black community. I mean, look at the 94 crime bill. That's Joe Biden and Bill Clinton, you know, and they call us names. They call us what, super criminals and stuff like that. Ray saying that if we integrate, we'll be, you know, creating a racial jungle. And they create policies that incentivize the black man being pulled from the home. They make policies to incentivize people in urban communities to get tossed in jail.
What do you mean by that, the black man being pulled from the home?
Well, go ahead, Carrie.
I just want to say, yeah, this is what upsets me the most is like, they give women incentive to be single because they get mm-hmm. more money for their kids. Why would you do that? Why not incentivize the man to stay in the home and give more money? But instead, single women do. So now you have kids growing up without a father in the home.
Because they don't want black men to be free thinkers. That's the biggest thing.
But how do you incentivize a black man to stay in the home? Why don't we just have people loving and caring for families?
Because they pull jobs out of urban communities. There is no more quality jobs in our communities. And so when there's no jobs, there's no work, right? And so if the woman needs money, guess what? She goes to the government. The government says, okay, we'll give you money, but you can't have a man in the house, right? So they pull the jobs out. Yep. They incentivize women with money to move the man out the home. And now we have a lot of feminine black men growing up in households, or you have black men growing up in communities with no jobs. And so what do they get involved in? Crime, violence, gangs, and all this other ridiculousness.
What about responsibility? Why doesn't that prevail over the will to get involved in crimes and, you know, leaving the home and leaving kids?
Because there is when you talk about a sense of responsibility, still the main focus is being able to pay bills, right? Being able to have your children taken care of. And so, you know, we can have all the sense of responsibilities in the world, but if we don't have opportunities in our communities, then that sense of responsibility goes from, you know, doing what's right to not doing what's right in order to provide for your family.
So when you talk about winning this congressional district, you're going up against someone what is she, about 110 now, Maxine Waters?
Almost, something like that. I think her and Jesus' birthday is on the same day.
So how are you going to beat someone who raises money and then apparently what, pays her daughter like close to $1 million or something? Over the last several years, mm-hmm. to what does she do? Doing some campaigning for her? How does that work? Like, is this campaigning really dirty?
Hers, yeah, absolutely. She doesn't even get money from the people. She gets money from insurance companies. We ran down her FEC reports, and we know where her money is coming from. If the people actually liked her, then they would give her money.
But they're electing her.
Mm-hmm.
So they must like her.
A little bit of people, a small amount of people. I mean, like, you have to admit, we have not had a quality candidate run against Maxine Waters in a very long time. You know, so now you have a quality candidate. But when you have someone who is not quality, I mean, you are discouraged from voting just by not having anybody who is serious about doing anything for our communities. And so she does win. But she wins with less than 20% of the vote of the entire population, the people who live in the 43rd district. New voters, no nothing.
When you talk about the money coming from insurance companies, you've raised a lot of money through, what, $3.5 million? I mean, that's unheard of, especially as a Republican in that congressional district. And 100% of that comes from small donors, from the individuals versus insurance companies. How are you doing that? What are you doing to get that kind of money?
We are being very visible. I think our outreach across the United States is vast. Our outreach in the inner cities is vast, too. You can't drive anywhere in South L.A. and not see a billboard, TV ad, radio ad, or not even see me walking in the street somewhere, you know, so.
But you're also spending money on some strategic things. You've hired companies, consulting companies,
Absolutely.
As most candidates do. Mm-hmm. And you're going, you know, when you went to the Trump fundraiser, mm-hmm. what made you think, or your consultant think, that that was the way to get exposure, and was it successful?
I don't think that going to the Trump fundraiser was a way to be successful or get a lot of exposure. We went, we had a, you know, great time, got to talk to Don Jr. about Opportunity Zones, got to meet a lot of great people. But when it comes to exposure, it didn't give me a lot of exposures. When we were running in the primary, we had a lot of issues with our consultants, and actually we barely won a primary, and I got rid of everybody. I was so upset. I got rid of everybody.
What were you upset about?
The amount of money they were taking from our campaign.
Oh, okay.
Right, and the amount of wasteful spending. You know,
what kind of stuff does that get spent on that really pissed you off?
First, she spent a lot of money on herself. which really made me upset because it was not a part of the arrangement that we had. And then the wasteful spending and traveling, the lavish meals she was having with everybody else, that also made me upset too. And then the fact that, you know, she didn't want to spend a lot of money on actually advertising in our communities to win this election, right? So when we made it past the primaries, I fired everybody. And I built a whole new team. I built a very robust team. And the team that I have now is three times as good as the team that I had then. You know, so I think that if we would have put our efforts that we're doing right now into the primary, we would have been blowing Maxine Waters out the water, which we are doing right now, obviously.
Well, why do you say obviously?
Well, because we are polling. We have internal polls that we're running through our campaigns, and we are running approvals between 68.9 and 72% to remove Maxine Waters from office. We've raised $3 million in his last quarter. $2 million is last quarter fundraising. We have a great outreach that we're doing in our communities. We have radio advertisements that run all day. We have TV advertisements that run all day. We have every single billboard in the 43rd district. And we are being completely visible in our community and very voicious about what it is that we want to do.
So spending all that money does get you out there, but you have to face what some people say. Robert Shrum, who's professor at USC, said it is impossible that a Republican could win in Waters District.
Uh-huh.
Donald Trump is profoundly unpopular in that district. So yep. He's not slamming you, Joe Collins, at all.
Yeah,
not
absolutely.
Saying anything against you, but just saying it's impossible to win in that district, and Donald Trump is unpopular.
See,
how do you
He needs to stick
that?
To teach in college, right?
Let's not talk about an ad hominem, okay? Yeah, okay, let him stick to teach. I'm a lawyer. I don't care. You can put other people down. Let's talk about the issue.
So we could say this. A lot of things that one thing that people weren't counting on is the fact that I'm from South Central. Me being a Republican is a choice that I decided to make. My grandfather had one of the largest black churches before mega churches was a thing. And so a lot of people came up under my grandfather. A lot of pastors in the district came up under my grandfather. A lot of people in the district came up under my grandfather. So when I got the military and I moved back home, those people gravitated back towards me.
Okay, so when you talk about that issue, and I understand that, you're saying that you can overcome it. It's not a given that a Democrat is going to win that congressional district.
Yeah, people in the community are Democrats not because they actually believe in what the Democratic Party is. They're Democrats because they've been told to be Democrats by their parents' parents, and this, that, and the other, right? But when you talk about a community that has been absolutely forgotten about by Maxine Waters, and you have someone that's coming in to have ideas that are actually putting ideas into effect, not just talking about things, but actually showing them, they're more apt to vote for you than the other person. And I absolutely agree. You know, President Trump is highly unpopular in our community, but people tell me all the time, I trust you to work with the president to help us. And we probably won't vote for President of the United States, but we'll vote for you.
Okay,
they probably
sense.
Will vote for our president now because Kamala Harris, you know, but...
Well.
So I have a question about, you know, I know that you were raised with drive-by shootings were just the normal thing. And, you know, your windows got shot out, your couches got shot. Like, that's when, you know, your mom decided, okay, we're out of here, took you to Texas. But do you feel, is there any fear campaigning, going door to door, talking to people? Do you have any fear like that? Or is that just kind of pushed aside?
No, I don't have any fear. I'm not scared of anything except mosquitoes.
Oh my God.
It's honest to God.
I mean,
truth.
The guy
was like
in Iraq. You know, when you talk about that, there's no fear, but those mosquitoes, they get to you. Got to take a quick break. Carrie, you doing okay over there?
Oh, I'm good.
All right. So we got one more segment with Joe Collins. You don't want to miss it. We're going to get into some of the issues when we get back. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Welcome back to Gervie's Law, turning Murphy's Law upside down on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Yeah, we're back. We're talking to Joe Collins, running for the 43rd Congressional District against Maxine Waters, Republican Joe Collins. He can be found at joecollinsforcongress.com, or if you want to see his prolific tweeting, it's at Joe Collins 43rd. Joe, if you'll play play along with me. I want to do a quick rapid round. We don't have a whole lot of time, but just going to touch on some issues. And you're doing an excellent job of, you know, so many people come on my show and you're going to find you've only been doing your show for 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. It's the late night wrap up with Joe Collins on right here on KBC. But you'll see when people come on the show, they just talk. They have diarrhea of the mouth. They just keep talking, talking. You're answering quickly and moving on. So this is going to be easy for you. It's the rapid round.
Okay.
I'm going to say a couple things. You tell me a little bit how you feel about it and we'll move on. Black Lives Matter.
Hate it.
Why?
They don't have any leadership. The idea, the concept of Black Lives Matter when it first started was great. But the thing that they forget is you're going to ask somebody who you're mad at and you're destroying their things to pass some legislation that's going to benefit you. It's not going to happen. You need leadership to point this anger in a direction that's going to be positive and productive for everybody in society. Have some bills, have some legislation, have some things that you want to get passed and get removed. They don't have that. And then they allow the organization to get infiltrated to support Democrats. I'm not with that.
Okay, but you're in concept with the idea of helping Black people elevate.
I mean, we have to. And not just Black people, Latinos, people who live in urban cities, even people who's losing their wealth right now due to coronavirus. Everybody needs help now.
Defunding the police.
Not a fan.
I didn't think you were.
not a fan.
All right. Legalizing recreational marijuana.
I'm torn on the issue because marijuana makes you dumb, but it doesn't do anything to hurt you. So I want our kids to be smart. I want them to use wisely if they're going to use it.
Kamala Harris.
I hate Kamala Harris with a passion.
Who do you hate more, Waters or Harris?
Maxine Waters, because I'm running against her. And I hope our president, you know, wipes the floor and Mr. Pence wiped the floor with both of them. But
would you debate Maxine Waters?
Actually, we're working on putting something together to get her to debate me right now.
And is it going to happen?
If she accepts, yes. If not, she's a coward.
Okay. What about Trump and the UAE-Israel deal?
I thought that was magnificent. I thought it was wonderful. I loved it.
Do you love everything that Trump does?
No.
What's something that you don't like?
The petty tweeting. The tweeting is petty. I feel like when you're a leader, especially when you're a leader and you already won, you don't have to flex on everybody via tweets. I mean, just keep doing what you do. You know, keep being a great president and let people talk trash. People going to trash you regardless if you like it or not.
Is racism a threat to domestic security in the United States?
No. I think that not talking about the past racism is going to be a threat because the idea is always going to be there. So we got to go ahead and put that on the forefront and discuss it, discuss what happened, have open dialogue, conversation, figure out how we can do what we can do to move forward.
Why and Kara, I'm going to let you jump in a second. Why do you do the free food pantry for your campaign headquarters?
Because we live in a poor community and people need help. They can't afford groceries. We do food and we also do hygiene and cleaning supplies.
And you had some fancy food yesterday, I heard.
Oh, my gosh. We had quail.
Quail. I don't know much about quail. Dan Quayle, wasn't he a politician?
It was good. It was a small pheasant. You know, we do really well with making a lot of partnerships and associations. So whatever people bring to the table is what we put out. And obviously we bring in quality, but we do it more than just at our office. We have a location in Watts. We have a location in Compton. We have a location in Gardena, Torrance, and Hawthorne as well. So we're picking up across the district.
Kara, you got a couple fast
Yeah,
singers?
I do. I have a question. Have you talked to people who were Democrats and asked them what they think about Joe Biden and his cognitive impairment and why the Democrats decided to keep him as the candidate? Have you heard anything or feedback from that?
I have. A lot of people actually come and approach me with that question. And we have a lot of people that are not fans of Joe Biden in the inner cities.
And then is it not a fan of Joe Biden because he is literally cognitively impaired? I've worked with the elderly for 7 years. My dad died of Lewy body dementia. My uncle has Alzheimer's. My grandfather died of Alzheimer's. I know when you see cognitive impairment, he's got it. Now, is it because of the candidate himself or because he is impaired?
It's two things. One is because of the crime bill that heavily plays a role in who people in America vote for. The only reason why he was the VP was because Barack Obama was Black. So they voted for Barack Obama. They didn't vote for Joe Biden. But now he's running on his own. For one, he's super old. He's been in office for well over 44 years. It's time for him to give it up. He doesn't have any answers. If he did, he would have helped Obama fix the White House and he would have, put all these awesome things that he has going on into play whenever he was in the Senate for a very long time. So the fact that he's old, he's very old, and that crime bill is going to hurt him.
What about the experience that he may have and you don't have? How do you respond to that? Obviously, you're not going up against him, how do you respond to people who say you have no experience?
Well, I'd rather have the experience of not knowing anything but having the will, the drive, and capacity to do something positive for my campaign than have the experience of a person who's done nothing but destroy our communities.
And maybe people are looking out for that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we just got a couple of minutes. Website is joecollinsforcongress.com. You tweet at Joe Collins 43rd. What do you have a message for people who either want to support you and help you out, or people who are on the fence?
If you want to support me and help me out, please visit my website, joecollinsforcongress.com. Please donate. Donations are very important because we're taking care of our community and we're doing things that our government should be doing. And obviously they're failing miserably at their job. So please help us take care of the people in the 43rd district. And we need volunteers. So please, you know, fill out the volunteer submission form and come out and help us make phone calls, walk the district, and feed people in our communities. It's safe. Trust me, it's very safe. So look forward to seeing you guys.
And also listen to your show Sundays at, what is it, at 9 p.m.?
9 p.m., yep. The Late Night Wrap Up with Joe Collins on 790 KABC.
Yeah, we know that show. We know that. We know that channel. Last thing, moving forward in 30 seconds or less, what do you expect is going to happen for Joe Collins for Congress?
You know, we're gonna get Maxine Waters to debate us. If not, we're going to win anyway. I mean, we have the district saturated in Joe Collins for Congress. We have people coming on board. Our team is diverse. We have Democrats, Republicans, Libertarians. Everybody's on our team. And that's a testament to the type of leader that I am. And this is something I look forward to pushing through the November election.
All right.
Well, and that's how it should be, because we are based on a republic, not a two-party system. So good for you, Joe.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to wish you the best, as we wish everyone who's on this show. Carrie, I think, will wish you. You want to wish Joe the best. He's not at your house right now, but you can.
No, he's not. Bad. He's not. But, you know, I do wish him the best, and I thank him for saving my house and the house color and the hideousness that it would have been. So thank you, Joe.
No, not a problem. Thanks, Carrie.
Is Maxine Waters a fan of Louis Farrakhan?
You know, she's probably a fan of – she's an opportunist as well. So she's a fan of anybody who's going to support her. Louis Farrakhan doesn't like Maxine Waters. Nobody. Listen, people come into my office. They say, you know what? We're sick of this old bag.
All right. We're going to leave it.
I swear to God.
Why don't you tell it like you really believe it? That's it?
Yeah.
Joe Collins, saying it like it is, being real. Thanks for being with us, Joe. Appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate you.
All right. Thanks. Thanks for listening to Girls Talk. Carrie, hope to see you and your beautiful face when it's recovered.
Next week, my friend, next week.
All right. Take care, everyone, and we'll see you next week right here on Gervie's Law.
This show was furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.